This is a story about William and Evelyn de Morgan, husband and wife. Although they died childless, they left some things of themselves behind that we can all enjoy and see in a small building on a busy road in Wandsworth. They left their work.
My name's Claire Longworth and I'm the curator here at the De Morgan Centre, which is a collection dedicated to the art of William De Morgan, the arts and crafts potter, and his wife Evelyn, who was a late Victorian artist.
Let's find out about William.
William started off training to be an artist by going to the Royal Academy School. And then he met William Morris and Edward Burne-Jones, and he contributed a few designs to Morris & Co. and seemed to have a flair for it, and decided that he was going to set up independently in business as a potter.
And what about Evelyn?
Evelyn was absolutely dedicated to being an artist from an early age. She writes in her diary on her 17th birthday something along the lines of, "I want to eat, sleep, breathe art. I want to be an artist." And she was very determined. When the Slade School of Art opened, she was one of the first three ladies to go there in 1873. And she was in her early 20s at this point. Evelyn painted in oils. That was mainly what she did. Her parents frowned upon her training as an artist. It wasn't a profession that they thought was suitable for their daughter.
Although her parents may not have wanted her to be a painter, she may well have been influenced by an important family member.
Her uncle was actually an artist. His name was Rodham Spencer Stanhope. And he had trained under a very great Victorian artist called G.F. Watts. And so through her uncle Roddy, Evelyn would have had access to G.F. Watts, and he described her as the greatest woman artist of her day, if not of all time. And coming from G.F. Watts, who was a Royal Academician, that was a real compliment.
In 1887, William and Evelyn's paths crossed.
William and Evelyn met because they were part of the same circle. They met at a fancy dress party organised by Mrs. Barrington, who lived near Leighton House. And the story goes that Evelyn came there dressed all in pink as a tube of rose madder, the pigment. And William saw this on the list, and she'd caught his eye. And he said on his name badge that he was madder still. So apparently Evelyn helped him button his glove, and from that a little romance bloomed. But how true that story is, we're not entirely sure.
That's really sweet, actually. What an inventive idea to go as a tube of paint.
What else would you do as a budding artist? She was in her 30s when she married William, and by that point, well and truly on the shelf in terms of Victorian point of view of women and how they should behave.
So why did their relationship work?
I don't think she would have married William if he wasn't really supportive of her work. So we talked earlier about how Evelyn might have contributed to William's business. But in actual fact, it was more about William supporting Evelyn, allowing her to continue to be a professional artist and not retire after she was married.
So they both carved out their own careers, but they just happened to be married.
You do have to consider that they did have very different directions. Yeah. And their connection is through their kind of mutual support of one another.
What else kept them together?
They had shared philosophical dreams and aspirations. When Evelyn married William in 1887, she becomes very close with Sophia, his mother, and by this point she was very involved with spiritualism, which was emerging during this period, and the tenet of it was really about communing directly with God. Together, William and Evelyn also, as a part of spiritualism and their kind of practice of spiritualism, had automatic writing sessions. And so these were about sitting down, clearing your mind, and just channeling thoughts from the higher realms, whatever, like just came out through your hand and onto the paper. And they actually published anonymously their book of automatic writing, and it was called Results of an Experiment. It's quite interesting. It's full of angels sending messages, and some of it's very mundane, and other bits are very ethereal. So that was one way in which they engaged together and practiced their spiritualist beliefs.
Do we have that book?
And there is a copy of it in the British Library, yes. For their kind of circle of friends, it would have been fairly normal,
yeah,
and wouldn't have been something that was questioned.
It seems they shared the same political views as well.
But they were quite vocal about their kind of feelings about the First World War, and that they were pacifists, and that the war was something that shouldn't be happening. And together they obviously had fairly strong views on feminism and the suffrage movement, and I think shows that by William's support of Evelyn full stop as her endeavours to be a professional practising artist. But William took it that step further, and at one point he was actually the vice president of the men's movement in favour of women's suffrage.
And women feature prominently in Evelyn's work.
Her paintings are mainly about women. And one of the reasons for that is Evelyn was a certain class. She couldn't just pick any old model off the street. It was easier for her and more accessible for her to draw female models.
Looking around the gallery, it's clear to see what Claire means. There are many women on the walls, but there's one in particular that stands out.
You can't fail but talk about Flora. And Flora is our largest oil painting that we have here in the collection, and she's really prominently displayed, and she's inspired by Botticelli's painting, The Primavera. Evelyn liked to paint in Florence. She was particularly in love with Florentian artists, like Botticelli. She's almost life-size, and she just has a very beautiful dress on her with floral patterns on it. She's got kind of long Botticelli-esque flowing hair, and the background is hyper detailed with all sorts of flowers on there, a kind of a fruiting tree behind her. And apparently Evelyn spent £200 on gold paint for this painting alone. And it says so much about Evelyn, about Evelyn's interest in women, about drapery, about her interest and fascination with Botticelli and Florence and mythology. And her works are full of strong female figures. And also, I think it's really important to note that the model for this painting is Jane Hales, who was her maid. And Jane was her friend, a lifelong companion, and a muse, and her face appears again and again in Evelyn's paintings throughout the gallery.
Her paintings sort of line the walls, and Flora's sort of in the middle of the room here. And in the cases, there are lots of pots and vases, and I'm assuming that's all William's stuff.
I'm overwhelmed by a sense of there being, in terms of William's work, lots of blue stuff and lots of red stuff. Why is that?
De Morgan's colour palettes are really very different, and it's worth noting the blue and green ware, he would have described it as Persian ware, and it was inspired by the Middle East. His love of this colour palette stemmed from a commission he had in the early 1870s, which was to install in Leighton House, which is in Kensington, the tiles that Frederick Lord Leighton brought back from his grand tour. So he'd gone off around the Middle East, and he brought back tiles from Syria and Damascus, and he built an extension which he called his Arab Hall, and De Morgan installed the tiles there. He actually made new tiles where there were gaps in the scheme as well. And he spent well over a year on this commission and fell in love with the colours. But he also had a very different colour palette, which is the red and gold, which has lustre decoration on it. De Morgan was fascinated by this technique. He would have seen examples in the V&A and the British Museum and the Uffizi when he spent time in Florence. But if you think about the lustre design, which kind of got this gold lustre sheen on it, if you think about seeing these pieces in a Victorian interior, perhaps lighted by candlelight or even gaslight, and how the flickering of those that sort of light would pick up on the lustre, and it would just look absolutely magical.
Their work sits here in harmony with each other. So William died in 1917, and Evelyn 2 years afterwards.
One of the last things that she did was actually design William's gravestone. And they're buried together in Brookwood Cemetery in Surrey,
okay.
and a rather special gravestone that she designed. After they died, the work that they had remaining in their studio went several different ways.
So how was it that all their work is united here to make up this collection?
Evelyn's sister was responsible for bringing our collection that we have here at the De Morgan Centre together. From her early 30s until she died, she really made it her lifetime's passion and responsibility and work to try and bring together as much of the collection as she could, with the vision that it was meant to be accessible for the public and public could come and visit her and see it. So when she died in 1965, a trust was formed to look after it, and that's the De Morgan Foundation that runs the centre here today. So from 1967, the collection didn't have a permanent home until we opened the centre here in 2002. The building actually was built in 1887, which was the year that William and Evelyn were married.
Now, when I came through the door, it was surprising because you suddenly feel like you're in a medieval hall, and then just splashes of colour everywhere with the paintings and the ceramics. It's quite a special little place because it does feel like a little jewel box.
The building in which the paintings and ceramics now sit was coincidentally built in the same year that Evelyn and William got married, and they may well have passed it. They would have found it where you will find it today, on the main road from Wandsworth to Putney. Meanwhile, inspired what Claire has shared with me, the next podcast is going to take me to Bedford Park in West London, where some of De Morgan's tile work can be seen in a pub called the Tabard Inn.